He said something so cool. He said, I always knew how the seasons would start. I always knew how they were going to finish. But that whole 10, 11 episodes, because my actors were so amazing and doing their thing, well, we went off a different direction. Like, Tim
Don't
was supposed to have a son.
That the music should be solemn.
This is Theo Rossi.
This is Theory.
Once upon a time, not long ago, where people wore pajamas and lived life slow, we're going back. We're doing it. This is the first ever hashtag Reaper Reviews, the double R, here on Theory. And what it is my brother and I, Kim Coates, also known as Tig, from a television show we did called Sons of Anarchy, are going to go and sit down and break down these episodes from that show. And we're going to do it a little different. They are fan-submitted episodes that they really want us to discuss. So this episode coming up is episode 4, season 1, called Patchover. And it was brought to us by BND Garcia Salazar. And the way that happened is you go on Apple Podcasts and you subscribe, rate, and review. And then in the review, write what episode you want us to talk about. So without further ado, the first ever Reaper Reviews on Theory.
What have you done to me, Theo? What are you doing to me? Why in the world, because we're BFFs for the rest of our life,
yes,
would you ever want to bring up that incredible 7 years that we had together way back in the 50s? Like, why would you want to do this?
Well, don't get ahead of yourself. What we're doing right now, this is the first time we're doing Reaper Reviews, which we're calling it. It used to be Tig and Juice time.
Yeah.
Now it's Reaper Reviews. We're going back. The fans are picking an episode. And we went back, you and I, which we'll get to.
Whoa.
And we watched an episode that looks like it was filmed in 1946. That's how much technology has changed. And we watched them. And the episode that we watched is season 1, episode 4, Patchover.
Yeah.
Which was brought to us, which I just discussed in the opening of this. And I want to go right into it, bro, because I'm shook up from this experience. That's the first time I've seen it.
No, I am too. Is it really the first time you've seen it?
I watched it when it was on air, but it was the first time I've ever seen it from that year, whenever that was, 2010 or whatever.
Eight. I'm telling you right now, I'm older than you. It was 2008. And I'm kind of shocked that you and I look exactly the same. Why do we look so good? I don't get it. You know, like, listen, that was a long time ago. And I'm telling you what, Rossi, to see you again when I rewatch this episode, the fans are obviously going to go crazy for this. And we're so happy to do it with them. But for me, this is like therapy. This is going to be like therapy for me.
Oh, my God.
You want to talk about theory, like theory. This is it. This is like going to be the top of the mountain for me. Because, bro, you were a baby and I was a young man. I'm an old man now who looks really good. You're a man with your father. You're killing it right now. But that was season 1, 4th episode, Patchover. Was jury under a lot of pressure or what? Like, what the hell happened?
First of all, let's start with the most important thing. You were sleeveless, but you didn't do much in the show. You were sleeveless.
Well, look, can we talk about that for a second? First of all, I want to talk about your arms first, okay? Those arms were built from Chivas and beer. Like those arms in the first season, they were the size of tree trunks.
100 pounds heavier. I was 100 pounds heavier.
You were. And for me, you remember how this whole thing started for Tig. I mean, you guys had to reshoot the pilot, and Clay and I, Ron Perlman and I came on to join the squad. I just finished playing an executive in a boardroom with short hair. I was a buck 90 dripping wet. And Sutter said, please come on. And we reshot the pilot. And that show we watched, Patchover, Kelly Jones, the amazing Kelly Jones, who figured out, I mean, you want to talk about your tattoos and your head and your tattoos. We were just figuring me out. Yeah. I think that was the last time you saw me, and it was like cut off.
Ever.
Like,
I was blown away because I didn't, again, I saw it the one time it aired. You were sleeveless. Like, the TIG I know is so different than that TIG, because the last memories I have of TIG are, you know, at the end, the last couple of seasons. And that guy was like, forget the look, the no facial hair, the short hair. That's a whole, you know, mind fuck to begin with. But the sleeveless thing, and you were, it was so, it, to me, it was like the beginning of a lot of TIG things that came were in that episode.
For sure. My cut, for example, came right out of a Cracker Jack box. I mean, it was clean. We roughed it up after a bit. Like, I was figuring TIG out. And Kelly, I remember Sutter walking into the trailer. That was the fourth show. So, like, 4 weeks before that, he walked in the trailer and goes, let's talk tattoos. What do you think? And, you know, being a clay guy and being a former, like, Marine like I was, and getting into, you know, guns and bikes and getting out of the Army and whatnot. It was big for some tattoos, and Sutter helped me pick those tattoos, really the early ones. And Kelly wanted to show them off, but we realized really quickly that look, that tank top, weird cutoff, that wasn't TIG. So we figured him out, and that was fun. That was a fun part.
What was TIG Traeger's first name again?
Alexander.
Alex Traeger, right?
You can call me Alex if you want.
So let me just paint this picture. So, because this is the first one, and I just, maybe I won't be in this much awe as I am right now. It's kind of cool. I had to take notes. That's the first thing.
Mine are right here.
Yeah, me too. I had to take notes because I said to Megan, I said, I have to take notes because there's so much going through my head.
So much.
And I want to make sure I don't miss it. So again, Season 1, episode 4, Patchover. We're going to be all over the place. We're going to be jumping all over these seasons. But yes, one, time has not been kind to most of the people on that show. Time has not been kind. Because.
Okay? Let me tell you something. Booney, who's one of our best friends in the world, he didn't have one gray hair on his head in that episode.
Not a gray hair.
Not one gray hair.
No.
Now you can't find a dark one. I mean, it is.
No. Father Time has kicked the shit out of a few people on that show.
It has.
I'm not going to say who. It's just kicked the shit out of some people on that show. Okay. Yeah. Now to get into the episode, because I definitely want to do that, because I can go on the whole journey of just existence of what it did for me nostalgia wise. But one thing I want to reference, and maybe I'll say it at the end, but I want to say it now, when it ended.
Yeah,
I can understand why people want to watch the next episode, because I was like, oh, I would like to see the next episode.
Holy crap. Kurt Sutter and his crack writing team. The one thing, they had so many things right on the show, but the one thing that they had in spades was you could not wait for the next week.
I couldn't wait.
Even this episode, like you and I just said, we watched it last night in separate cities, separate countries, obviously. Yeah. And now we're talking, you know, by Zoom, and it's just so awesome. That Kurt Sutter, that motherfucker, did he know how to reel you in?
Oh my God.
I forgot about those. Anyway, we'll talk about it. But yes.
That was the first thing I want to bring up, is that when I started, I was like, oh man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to like sit through this. And I don't know what it's going to make me feel. And then, you know, things started happening, and we'll get into that. But I just wanted to really, I just want to tell anybody who's listening to, I understand now. Like, I was watching it and I was like, I wanted to just start racing through every episode and I wanted to know what happened. So let's just, it opens with Taylor Sheridan, which is crazy when you think about that story, as the deputy in the office with Jay Carnes, who was one of my favorites from The Shield, because it's one of my favorite shows.
He's so good on this show. Yeah.
He's so good on this show. And it opens with Taylor, and for the people who don't know, Taylor played the deputy the first two seasons, and now is just this juggernaut screenwriter, director, you know,
Oscar nominated like crazy.
Oscar nominated like crazy. And then Dayton comes barging in looking 700 years younger than he is.
Not mentioning anyone who Father Time hasn't been kind to, of course.
No.
Dayton would agree. He would agree. He would agree with you. He'd go, God, I look good back then. What happened to me?
Good. So he comes in, and there's obviously, I'd have to go back and watch the first three, but there's this, we know all about this outlaw. And that's where, remember, people kept asking us, what does Sam Crow mean? Sam Crow, because they say Sam Crow every other line. And for the people that don't know, Sons of Anarchy, Motorcycle
Redwood, Club, Redwood.
Original, Sam Crow.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's no W on the end. There's no W for a reason. It's C-R-O, yeah.
So tell me, when you first turn it on, what are you feeling? Because this is the first episode.
I'm so glad you're asking me this. There I am. I've got my drink at my side. I mean, that's
what are you right drinking? What are you drinking? Paint me the picture. What are you drinking?
Red wine. You know me. I'm a red wine guy. And here's what happened previously on Sons of Anarchy. I remember, dude, like mine hasn't come up yet. This is only the fourth episode. Mine might be next week or the week after. I had so much fun in the audio room going, you did it too.
We all went,
previously on Sons of Anarchy. And then they cut to what happened the week before. I forgot those, how exciting those previouslys were. And then you start right into it. And then all of a sudden, Sutter, again, has this 8-minute segment, 9, 7. And it's just balls to the walls. Holy crap. And then, riding through this world, dun-dun, all alone. Like that song which drove me crazy all those years. It drove me crazy. Bob Thiel, nominated song. It brought back some heebie-jeebies, that song, to me. But I couldn't stop watching the show. And I got to tell you, bro, it does look different. But Paul Maybaum, what he did and what he was able to do with those cameras and shooting 18-hour days and getting lights when it was dark out and getting that aperture turned as wide as he could with Dave and his boys shooting that. For me and you and all of us that were on it, you just said it, for people to go, you don't understand. I can't wait for next Tuesday. They would talk about it. Couldn't wait for next Tuesday. That gave me that feeling last night when I started.
Yes.
Because you and I and the rest of the crew, we didn't really watch the show when we were filming because we didn't want to. We wanted to watch it at the end or when the season was done shooting. At least that's the way I felt. Mm-hmm. And so when people – but we knew what we were shooting because we were in the damn thing. But we didn't see it edited. We didn't see it cut. We didn't see it put together with music. That show last night was just 43 minutes of balls to the walls. It's kind of amazing.
And what's crazy, and I'm so glad we're doing this one as the first one because it's so early on, like we didn't, you know, start with a season 6, 7 one, is there's so many things that people don't realize. One, we don't, when you're not shooting with other people, you might read it in the script once, but you don't know what they're doing.
No.
So I'm watching that and I'm blown away by like other people's scenes. The other thing is like, I start doing like my acting stuff, I'm like, oh, that person must have worked like one day that episode. Or I'm like, oh, that person, oh, where were they? Oh, and then I thought when Tig and Juice come busting in, you know, onto the Patchover party, I wondered, we shot the same day that those guys had the party.
Of course.
We were probably in the trailers all day.
But hanging out.
Yeah. To get, I know this is a review of the episode. I want to just say, so now you got the chief coming in. Sam Crow is obviously, from what I'm realizing, and I feel like I'm a fan watching it for the first time, we're the outlaws. We keep all the corporate stuff out of Charming. This Fed, you know, played by Jay Carnes, is there, who we come to find out also has this thing with Tara, you know, this past history. First of all, let's get into the most important thing. Ron was skinny as hell, bro.
Okay, I actually have a hard time not laughing, but that motherfucker, what a president he was. I mean, Charlie in the later years did his own thing, which was amazing, and he was younger and tough. Perlman was born with a cigar in his mouth.
Yeah,
Perlman was that gravitas, beautiful Scotch. When he spoke, he loved playing Clay so much. And again, as you said earlier, what Kurt Sutter's doing in this episode is he's laying the groundwork for so many things. Mm-hmm. He's laying the groundwork for we are into guns. We are into AKs. We're into selling guns. Okay. We're into bike terminology. And early on, you see this young cop, like you just said, Sheridan, someone comes bursting in and he shuts the door. Right away, there's a good cop, bad cop thing. Unser comes busting in and goes, hey, I run this place. You don't shit. So there's all these building blocks. And then Gemma, we'll get into her. I know you'll want to. But the way she teaches Tara stuff and Cherry with that other girl, the way they're teaching everyone the biker terminology really early on this show. So not only were we all learning from all the research we did and stuff, talking with Linson and DL and everybody, Kurt Sutter is teaching the audience. And that was amazing.
I don't know if, again, you just hit it on the head. This seemed like the most important episode ever. It was like,
ever.
And maybe I'm wrong the way an episode four works. I don't know if we just got lucky and happened to pick one of the most important episodes because of exactly what you said. We already started the problems between Jax and Clay. Like he was like, hey, everybody's starting to notice.
Yes.
You know, you're disrespecting him. The gun stuff, right? It shows how important we got into really hard into like motorcycle outlaw culture. We showed comedy, which we'll get to. We showed Gemma with Tara, the baby, you know, all this, you know, the stud, the Jacksons, like all this stuff.
Cool. What kind of a writer, except Kurt Sutter, will do this? Charlie prancing in, looking amazing. There's mom by the baby, overlooking this little baby that probably shouldn't even be alive. And then boom, we cut to shots at the end of him doing that girl. Yeah. In the patch over, Tara's looking at it, and the episode's over. You're going, what?
Oh my God.
What? Like, start the next one now.
I got to tell you, I guess because we were in it.
Holy crap.
And maybe the people who were listening to this will not understand the excitement. I think maybe because we were in it, I am like the mastery of the way he weaved these episodes.
It's remarkable.
It's remarkable. So, okay. So, obviously, you know,
I just got to add to that because we could talk all day. Sutter recently is doing a lot of Q&A, which is great. It's like my pail and shovel time. Like you open it up to Twitter and Instagram and people ask you questions. And he said something, I just saw it on my Twitter. I just looked at it and he said something so cool. He said, I always knew how the seasons would start. I always knew how they were going to finish. But that whole 10, 11 episodes, sure, we had pins in the wall. Yes, we had the writer's room. But because my actors were so amazing and doing their thing, well, we went off a different direction. Like Tig was supposed to have like a son.
Wow.
But then it changed to being a couple of daughters. Like they just think, anyway. I'm just saying that Kurt
Sutter, and he sees it because as someone on the outside, which you and I are now, I started seeing things in there. Like it's crazy as it sounds, like very little things that I'm like, that doesn't work. So I'm sure he sees it. And then I see the things that do work and I'm like, oh man, he's going to lean into that. And ultimately, because you and I and everybody listening to this, if they've watched it, know the future, we can see what he leaned into from these.
100%.
So I can't imagine being a showrunner or creative because you must be analyzing this thing like it's your own child, right? You're looking at every part of it. And it was so funny because I guess it is, it's so early in the process. It's, you know, episode four. I'm watching the characters become the characters they're going to be. And maybe like, you know, in the case of Juice and Tig and especially Clay, like a lot of things have changed. But that ethos, that beginning part of them, you're seeing it formed in these episodes, like the Jax thing, like the swagger and the James Dean of bikers and all that. Like you're seeing it happen. Blown away.
I'm blown away too. I mean, relationships within that club again. And I think this is like you and me, when we said yes to doing this show, 90% of us were like film guys, film men and women, you know, and there was a few that had done a lot of TV, like Katie and Ron, but all my, and film as well, obviously. Chrome has done like 1,000 movies. And he's brilliant in all of them. But Sutter, when like I, we didn't know what he was going to write. This was part of my giving it up for my own craft. I didn't know where Tig was going to go. I trusted Sutter. I didn't want to be just a sociopath. I wanted to have colors. He said, you will trust me. And I did. But you and me and Charlie and Booney and Tommy and Pearl and Dayton, all of us guys, we would go, okay, what's happening now? And Sutter would give us just enough if we needed to, especially your character near the end. I mean, holy crap, did you need some kind of an input with the way Juice went mm-hmm. by the end, which was so cathartic and tragic. So anyway, I'm just saying that I think that go ahead.
And getting back into the episode, it's like when those credits came up, I was a guest star the first year. Dayton was a guest star the first year. Taylor was a guest star, we know. So my name's, you don't have that logo in the front, right? So that happens. You hear the song, which you and I, there's something with that song where I appreciate it so much, but you got to understand, like when I came out at my sister's wedding, I was in the wedding party, the DJ played it. Like, I mean, it literally is.
We can't listen to it anymore.
Anywhere you go. I mean, if they notice you're somewhere, they'll throw it on and it's a great song. And I actually just saw, what's his name out here in Austin who sings it for the soundtrack.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I went and, I'm blanking on the name because I take too much CBD, but I watched him. And while I was there at the concert, the little jazz club in Austin, I was even ducking my head when it came on, not saying it's not a good song. It's very catchy and it works, but it has followed us.
Your followers have to understand, your millions of followers out there have to understand. They're not Jews. They're not Tig. They're not Chibs. We've heard that song every day. It's like when you go to bed, we've heard it over and over, and it's one of the greatest songs ever, but I can't listen to it anymore. It's too much.
So that happens. And then what I loved was there were things like you said, when we go to, well, we, not you and I, cause we were on that run, which we'll get into, but when Sam Crow and Sons show up at the Devil's Tribe or whatever jury's thing is
Nevada.
Called, yeah, Nevada.
Devil's Tribe. Exactly.
He says MC royalty in the house. And I was just thinking, it was so cool because there's a couple of things that hit me when he said that. One, obviously Sam Crow, you know, Sons of Anarchy is the top in this world of Charming and in the world of that TV show. Sons of Anarchy are the top, right? They're the top club, you know, in the country, most likely, right?
Correct.
And then I had a moment where I turned to Megan and I paused it and I said, you know what's funny? I'll never be in the Beatles. I'll never be in a rock band as much as I wish I was. But this show, doing this show, was as close to being a rock star as possible. And when he said MC royalty in the house, it was like, then you saw all the bikes going and stuff like that. And it brought me back to those moments of when we were doing this and we were touring all over and going everywhere. It was like as close as you can be, I would think, to being in like an 80s hair band in the 80s.
Theo, look at me. Listen to me. You'll never forget this. You, Boone, and myself, we went to Australia. We did a 6-city tour. Boone played the guitar. You were funny. I was sexy. All three of us on stage. We took more photos than you're even allowed. One of those places very early, and we had all those security guys that were taking care of us. We had a white van, and the thing was over. And they were very punctual. We had to fly to another city the next day. Another city, like it was on. We were on time, selling our Sons of Anarchy love to Australia. And we walked out a back door, and I saw it in our guy's eyes. This guy from Wales or Scotland. In the van. There was 50 women, 60 women who came bursting out, and they were going to catch you. They were going to catch you. Boone, I had to shove in. You kicked me because you were faster than all of us. And they shut that van. We were out of there like James Bond. I'll never forget it. It was
unbelievable. And it's all from this TV show that I'm watching last night. And I'm thinking as I'm watching it, when we were doing that show and that moment at that time in history in our lives, never for a second was I thinking it would be that, the Australian thing, like you just said. I was just hoping that I could fulfill the scenes that he was writing. I wanted to be good in them. I wanted to find my place amongst, because it was such a large group of people. There was a lot of jockeying going on. So that MC royalty in the house thing kind of made me think, where I was like, wow, there were so many things he was laying the foundation for. So then coming up after it, the one thing that sticks with me, and tell me if you thought this, I don't know if Sons would work today. Meaning, like, I know that, I think the concept and the whole thing, but it's such a different time. And let me tell you why I mean that. What I mean by that is, one, there's like literally, and this isn't a joke, there's about 700 scripted shows on television. So that's a whole different thing. Two, the fans had to sit with you week after week. So you had to wait the 7 days and then wait the 6 months. So what happens is we became family with them. Like, they knew us over a year. We do interviews in between, magazine stuff. We go do other movies on the 6 months, come back. So we became part of someone's life for 7 years, not a binge season, 7 years, right? Also, I'm curious if, because there were things on that show and in that world and in that life, the violence, the stuff with women, the stuff with that. I'm very curious if in today's world, it's not that many years later, if it would stand up.
It would stand up, but it would be completely different. You said so many good things in there. We smoke in almost every scene. Cigarettes. Those days are over. They're not real cigarettes anymore. They're different. It's all different. The Sopranos for me was the beginning of a week, next Sunday on HBO. Now, that was the beginning of a television explosion of amazing actors doing television easily back and forth and film easily. That was the beginning for me. That exploded. Our show, Sons of Anarchy, was one of the last. We were in the right time, right cast, right script, right storyline. The water cooler talks on the Wednesday morning after Tuesdays, you and I know this because we're so involved in it, and we're for 7 years. Millions of people around the world lost it. They lost it. They couldn't wait for the next week. Now, I'm not saying it's better or worse today. It's just different.
It's just different. Yeah, I'm not saying it's better or worse. I'm just saying it's different.
It's just different. And I'm so happy to have been part of that family of writers and Fox and John Landgraf and all his team and Sutter, obviously, and meeting all you knuckleheads. We were starting, this is the patch over, the fourth show for a season. There's no way we knew what the show was going to be. No. I mean, heck, Theo, we went to the same bar every Friday night, had a couple of Coca-Colas to talk about our week. No one knew who we are. I mean, a little bit. They knew who we were a little bit.
No, very little.
But we couldn't go to that bar 3 years later. We couldn't go anywhere. No.
After season two, it was like season two with Gemma, which we'll get to. So then, okay. So then what I noticed about this episode, a lot of riding, a lot of motorcycles, right?
A lot of motorcycles,
a lot of chasing, a lot of chases, a lot of stunts, right? Clay, obviously, on the toe. You saw Clay coming in on the toe.
Yeah.
Pinned straight up with his hands. You saw that? Like, just the way he's riding. They got that big shot on him going down to juries. But then before that, you had a lot of the Jacks, Bobby. They were, like, literally doing stunts, talking to each other on the motorcycle.
Hey, can I just say, even before that, I noticed something. There was a shot where Clay and Charlie are talking about doing the patch over in the garage, Telemoral Garage.
Yep.
I had to come zipping up on my bike, screech to a stop and go, what did I say? We're in trouble or something. Some shit's going down.
Yeah.
I had to do that 22 times because it had to be exact right timing of me landing when they were done their conversation. But that was the most fun 22 takes of do it again. Let's do it again. Yeah.
And we were in the garage a lot. Like that slowly went away, right? We were all in the garage. We all had our work shirts on.
Good old days.
Yeah, yeah. That went away. We had like, it was like, oh, we do work on bikes and we are bikers. Like we had, it was showing so much in the life of these characters and this thing that blown away. So, okay. So Clay on the toe, the bikes, all that. So then we get to, and it really has become such an iconic scene when you and I break into that place with that dog. And we clicked the lock and I dosed the dog. I got to tell you, and this is true, I was crying laughing when at the part
You should see what I wrote down. No,
I literally said this is not a joke. Megan goes, "Are you?" I was crying when you, and I'm going to tell you the part I was crying about. This is when the tear dropped out of my eye. The scene is basically over. The scene's over when I say, "Should I shoot him?" And you go, "Just drive." The scene's over. Like, you could have easily cut. And it goes about another 5 seconds, and you put your hand back, and you go, "I wrote it down." You go, "Look at my ass.
Look at my ass."
I lost my mind. I was crying laughing because there was so many emotions. I want to hear from you on that because I was literally dying.
I know for a fact that the one percenters out there that have met you and me over the years, and they talk about the show, how addictive it was for them and everyone who watched it, whether you're a lawyer, a doctor, service member, or a biker. I mean, college kids, it was epic. They would say to me in season 5, 6, and 7, they go, "God, so I can't stop watching it, but the good old days are kind of over." That and I said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" And they go, "You and Juice."
Yeah.
They go to that scene. And Sutter, to his unabashed brilliance of, he would watch you, Theo, before he got to know me and then get to know me. "We're funny motherfuckers. We're funny. And we're real and we're funny." And yeah. He just went, "You know what? It's time for that painting right now in the 4th episode." But he goes farther than that, because the lines that you and I came up with and that he wrote and that we did, you and I couldn't believe our good fortune. It was a Friday night. It was just you and me. Paris Barker was directing, and it's you and me and the dogs. And you and your fans know this, are, and so am I, but you really are like a dog guy, and I'm a dog guy too, but you really, and those wranglers, these people need, your fans need to know this, Theo. We had the best dog wranglers on the planet. That, those Dobermans, there was always, yeah, you always have to have two. And one Doberman got a little tired. He couldn't run anymore. And then that one was just an absolute, and the guy said, "He won't bite you, but get to that truck as fast as you can." I went, "Holy shit, I might be a method actor, but that's nuts." And you see the wrangler holding him by the collar, and I'm looking at you going, and you're going, "Oh, I'm going to beat you to the truck, and you're faster than me." So I almost got a head start on you, and that dog always got to my heels, just on time before it shut. Man. It was beautiful, and he didn't bite me. I mean, what a scene.
But what a scene and what a night. You're right, because there's something that people have to understand, that when you're shooting a television show, that, you know, you start like 4:30 in the morning on Monday because they want to get ahead of the week. And then by the time it comes to a Friday, or some people call a Fratterday, you will literally start, your day will start about 5 p.m. sometimes. And you know you're going into, you know,
till
early,
the sun
early
comes up.
Till Saturday morning.
Yeah.
And most people, especially when tenure kicks in, try to not work those days because they want their long weekend. And I've always loved the Fridays because usually you're alone. Like, it'll be you and just one other person, and the crew is kind of more relaxed. There's food trucks. Everybody's kind of just in the, the Friday money thing, the money in the jars, and you're doing all these things. And it was just you and I. And again, we had such a big cast and we had such this thing, and we were right there off the studio doing that. And man, I got to tell you, even the way we walked in the fence when we clipped the lock, when he was foaming at the mouth, I couldn't stop laughing. I thought it was so, and I don't like watching myself, but man, did I laugh during that scene. The little subtleties where there was no words.
Oh,
were incredible. So funny.
So
that scene happens, which is, you know, been a scene that's always been iconic with us. And I'm sure that's why a lot of people wanted to, you know, pick this episode. Later on, you know, then we get back to the jury stuff. They're patching over the devil's club.
Hang on. You can't run over this. I have to say that the next scene, so the dog bite, and then we're gonna roll the big tube of oil and gas.
Oh wait, I'm not going over that. Okay, that's not next. No, I'm not going over that.
Okay, good.
That that scene, let's go right into that then. That scene, first of all, that's the first scene I noticed. And this is not an exaggeration. I might have been 30 pounds heavier than I am right now, right? That's the first one I noticed that I look enormous, like enormous, 100 a giant, like compared to what I am now. So I was like, wow, I was really a different person. That's number one. Number two, with that scene, and again, you and I always talk, hindsight's 2020, 10,000 foot view, but that comedy duo could have been the Laurel and Hardy of the MC world from then on out, because that scene was him coming to get something. Hey, man.
Two lines. You want a bond? When I say to you, you want a bond? And then what I say after that? And then you go, why do you got to be that way? I mean, those two lines, I'm crying with laughter.
Crying.
I'm taking my pants right off. I'm going to dunk my balls right in your mouth. And we're yeah. friends. No. And then you go, why do you got to be that way?
And then my favorite part after the why you got to be that way, my favorite part after is as I'm walking away, I say, pull your pants up.
Yeah. No, that was so funny. That was added. Just pull your pants. I have to leave
pull
it
your
down.
Pants up.
No. Oh. Just, anyway, that was brilliant to see, and that's part of the whole legacy of that show. You couldn't take that Juice Tig comedy shit away. It'll always be there, but there was more to do. Sutter had more to do.
And the truth is, it was so organic, and it was two characters that were so different, because at that point, you know, Juice was like the dumb goof. You know, the dummy, like, you know, the innocent, you know, whatever. And Tig is, in his own right, this, you know, psychopathic killer in a way, right?
100%.
So you have to have those two personalities exist together is, I mean, you can't create a better duo of, because they're so different. And he wants to be like Tig, and maybe Tig has this thing where he likes this innocent kid.
Holy crap. That is so true. And people need to know this, you fans out there, that in these early days, and this is an early day show, I'm so glad we're starting with this. We've got so many shows to talk about. But this one, in particular, Theo and I remember this. I kept going, okay, so Juice is now, he's been patched in. He's a full member. He's not a prospect anymore. You were probably the last guy patched in.
100%.
The late Johnny Lewis was our prospect on that show. Yeah. And so I remember Tommy and me constantly talking, going, I wonder if I was the sponsor? Were you the sponsor? Like, mm-hmm. who really? And so, and Sutter never wanted to tell us anything in those early days about stuff.
No, at one point they even referenced Jax was like the guy who
yeah.
it was so odd. Yeah, we never really knew, or I maybe they did. Maybe again, I'm not the expert on the show.
No, I don't think we really knew. But they found out later on that it was the Chibs Juice dynamic. Of you wanted to take your own life later on in the show and things like that, that Chibi thing with you was probably, yeah. but Chibs left you alone. It was more me and you early. So I didn't know, but it was just a beautiful sequence of humor in those early days that we got to rely on. And it was great to do with you.
Yeah. And that's what I wrote. One of the things I wrote in my notes was like, And everybody has to understand this. Like, you do something like that, you're younger, not necessarily even in years, you're younger in your career, even if you've had a bigger career before. Again, like we said earlier, a lot of people had never done TV. This was a big first for a lot of us, in a sense right. of, even for someone like Katie, who was on Married with Children, you know, this was different, right? It's not a sitcom.
Right.
There's a lot of people around. Ron had never done TV. Charlie had never done TV. And definitely none of us had done something, what we come to find out in the size and scope of this. And I wrote, and I just wrote this for myself last night. I wrote, I miss that sense of community we had. It was truly the best of times, even in the absolute chaos. Like, I think that I was so ready to leave at the end. And I think a lot of us felt that way. And now looking back on it, even with how chaotic it was, because it was, you know, we've stated this before. There was definitely a sense of wonderment and community that came with it. And it was like piercing through this episode to me. Like, I could feel it where I was like, man, the possibilities of like everything were endless at this moment. in that, in because it's so early on in the journey of it all.
Endless. And people who watched all 92 episodes, some over and over and over again, they will, it will be so apparent to them in watching this show, like they did before they listened to this, the Bobby Clay. I mean, there was this thing where Clay and Bobby were tight. Obviously I was tight with Clay because I'm the sergeant at arms, but even Bobby was Clay. He wasn't pro. He was pro Clay back then.
Yeah.
And to see those relationships, to have Clay go, what's the kid? How's the kid? He's coming around. I mean, that line that Boone says to Charlie, you got to get right with this. You got to get right with
when
that.
When he's sitting with him, you got to get right. People are starting to notice you're turning on Clay or whatever.
You got to get right with that. You got to get right with him. You got to get right with that in your head. That line, you got to get right with it. That is a very iconic, beautiful one percenter club line that Sutter picked up on. And we know when that came out that it was some serious stuff that was going down. So very early on in relationships, for sure.
Yeah. And then I wrote in the notes, like, then that leads out to when the Mayans come. And this was something we just got so crazy. There's a giant gunfight.
Like a giant from 8 feet away.
From 8 feet away, one person got hit, or two that I know.
In the leg. Jury got hit in the leg. I think that's it. Like, what? Are we bad?
No, and then one other guy, I saw another guy walking with Happy and them. He got gunned down. And then another guy on the Mayan bike, like, fell backwards, right?
God bless him. Yeah.
But I don't know if it was the A team or whatever it was, but no, how? There's a line in Goodfellas where he goes, how could you miss from that range, right? When he shoots Spider. I was thinking, is this the worst shots in the world? Is everybody the worst shot? Why are they not getting hit? But again, and we really upped the ante over the years of like these giant gunfights.
Everybody got hit by the end. Everybody. Yeah. We had van loads of guys that were, just what the hell?
So there's this big gunfight. You have Happy and all them come out. The Devil's Tribe has now just been patched over, which, again, that was something I learned. During this episode, I didn't know that they patch over clubs, smaller clubs. And we learned this because even in my research, I had not really known about patch overs. That's definitely very significant in outlaw culture.
I loved when they do the patch over. And of course, a couple of the extra boys who are with the Devil's Tribe, they're told to throw their cuts down on the ground, and Perlman and Charlie are sitting on their bikes and they look at them like, oh wow. that's a big mistake, but that's okay. We don't need you anyway. It was just, wow.
And again, you know what it felt like too? And again, tell me, did you feel that there was an ease to like the way there wasn't as much conflict within, even though there was the Jackson Clay conflict throughout, right? And we all know what happens with that. It felt like it wasn't like the most serious conflict. Like, and let's go into, by the way, which I want to get into, is the Gemma Tara stuff, right? Gemma really created, like, that character is such a symbol. Like, I could see why so many people love it, because she just really was all about one thing: family. Nobody gets in the way.
You want to talk about, Kurt Sutter and John Linson knowing. Because, Kurt and Katie are married together. I can't imagine what those conversations must have been like at Fox. Katie Seagal's going to be playing Gemma. Everyone's going to go, what? She beautiful? Yeah. She's talented? Yeah, but she's a sitcom. She's not. And Kurt goes, no, she's playing Gemma. That's the only one I know. For the rest we're going to cast and audition, but she's playing. And when you watch her, and when you watch what Sutter wrote for her, holy crap. She was so perfect for that part. No one could have played her like that. No one in the world.
She needed that humor. There's a line in the Cadillac where she goes, do you mind if I smoke? And she goes, would you put it out anyway? And she just smirks. She doesn't even say anything back. And you know, everything you need to know about her is right there, right? That's who Gemma is, right? Like, she is in control. She's the matriarch. Like, she is, that's it. Yeah. All business, right? And you can see how they started to paint Tara as a problem, right? Like, she's, even though she's done nothing wrong, and this is the brilliance of Sons of Anarchy, you should be rooting for Tara. You should be rooting for the deputy. He wants this outlaw club who sells guns out of the town. But yet, they're the problem. The good people are the problem in that show. And it's amazing how even after me watching it, I'm like, oh, what's she going to do now? What is she doing? And then, and yet, here's her boyfriend or whatever Jax is at that point, sleeping with someone else, almost killing people in a gunfight, but you're rooting for him.
Jay Karnes spends the entire episode taking photos like a cop should, or at least try. And you should be all rooting for him. But 18 million people are going, put that fucking camera down. What are you doing, you little prick? Like, he's a cop. And they go, no, we don't. And let's bring this up. You want to talk about, like, the violence that was obviously, come on, it's a fictional show, people. It's a fictional show. Yeah. It had incredible girth and weight, and we all loved it for the characters and the iconic show it became. But it's fictional. When Jay Karnes, at the end of a huge gunfight, one guy's got barely a nip in his head, but that's how Sutter could just, we're not going to have too many deaths because we just got to keep going with the show. Yeah. Jay Karnes goes, Jesus Christ. I'm sitting on the chair going, Jesus Christ.
Christ.
How did we do all that?
The National Guard.
And then I have a question for you. And again, if Kurt was with us, maybe we'll get him on the show later. We'll see what happens, see if he's a good boy. But honestly, Sutter would have an answer for this. But I always wondered, how in the world did Cone, is that his name? Cone? Jay played a guy.
Agent Cone. Yeah, you're right.
Agent Cone.
I didn't know that.
I think it was Cone.
And it is. K-O-H-N. Agent Cone.
K-O-H-N. Good for you. And so here we are at the end of the show. Charlie's looking at his beautiful son is still alive. And then we cut to Tara looking at these like really graphic sexual photos. And I'm thinking, how the hell did he get those? Like, it's one thing to be across the street.
Through a window. High-powered lens.
Okay.
He had those big lenses. So I pictured it in my head. I was thinking he was outside creeping. He was creeping. Because, look.
We got dogs. We got, like, the tribes now. Come on. How did that happen?
Again, suspension of disbelief.
From a drone? From a drone? Like a little drone?
It was a pretty clear picture, too, which leads me into, he really did, I mean, and you know, it's such a big thing for Charlie and that character of Jax. He painted that character, and we're in episode 4. You couldn't really paint a character more perfect with the long hair and the outlaw and the, like, he paint, it's almost like this messiah of the MC world. And he was this young kid and reading the poetry of his dad, and he has his little sack on and, you know, standing up to a guy, they're painting his bed. And the look and the whole thing, you know, you understand why that Jax character is so iconic. It's iconic.
There's nothing quite like that kid on television. At the right time, right period, right writing, everything. Charlie, the bad boy, the good boy, the struggling with the death of his father, the Hamlet analogy. I mean, all that stuff, me being a big Shakespeare guy. Yeah. Charlie was the guy. And he grew.
Oh, yeah. You could see it in that episode.
Watching his performance there, that's so long ago. By the time we were in the seventh season, he's a different man. He's a different actor. Truly. Kind of amazing. God.
It was, and I could see it in knowing him so well, and you too. You could see what he was working through from Charlie to Jax, right? You could see, you know, the stuff with the dialect, the stuff with the, you know, his movement and whatever.
And swagger and the white tennis shoes, and people didn't understand white running shoe thing. And he had the greatest reasoning for doing that. He went to Frisco. He did his background. He heard about a kid who got, you know, you and I know that story. Maybe we shouldn't tell it on the airwaves, but Charlie, like all really good actors do, you go with a choice and then you make another choice and another choice. And a director or Sutter, we may mold them, but if you don't have choices, you got nowhere to go and you'll have nothing in the end. So don't be afraid. And Hunnam was not afraid of any of those choices, and it was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and he did two things in this episode that really spoke to me as an artist. He did the first one was, and this again created the dissension between him and Clay, was Clay had told him they're going to have to learn on their own when they're outside on the bikes. Hey, they patch over, they're going to have to get tough, and maybe some guys, Jerry can take care of himself, maybe some guys are going to get killed by the Mayans. It is what it is. And then directly disrespects him towards the end of the episode where he says, the Vegas will stick around. The Vegas guys will stick around. And Clay looks at him because, you know, it's that Godfather thing. Don't talk outside the family. And he looks at him and you'll go, oh, wow, he just disrespected him like,
boom, just like that. Right there. Big slap in the face. Absolutely. Oh, my God.
So now
the Mayans and SOA, we were like that.
Yeah.
By the end of the seventh season, we were basically drinking together. But at the beginning, did we want to wipe each other out? Like wipe them right off the planet.
Yeah. So then there's another thing Jax did. And I think it's towards the end too, where he comes in the hospital and he sneaks up behind Tara and he taps her on one shoulder, but he's on the other side. And she kind of turns around. It's really cute. And then, you know, she goes, are you okay? And he kind of goes, you know, it shows her there's no bullet holes. And you're starting to build that, like I said earlier, that James Dean cool of this guy, where he's like this young, you know.
That's such a good point.
He's so cool. He's so suave. And he was planting these little seeds, Sutter, you know, and obviously Charlie and these little decisions, you know, smoking the joint with Bobby Elvis and everybody's got the cigarettes, like you said. And he's just, you know, even when the guy he hits on the head, the guy he hits with the helmet, which is one of Bobby's best lines, the before and after, he hits it. Oh, it's one of the best lines ever. Hits him on the head. That guy comes back at the end and Happy says, I thought that was your girl. And he doesn't even say anything, Jax. He just goes, he smiles like, yeah, just one of the many that Jax, you know, does. So I thought that was just the building of Jax, like the creating of that. Was really evident in this episode, that cool sense of him, you know?
And that's right. And Sutter took it even, we've said this three times now, but it's got to be said right now. Sutter's characterization of Jax, just when you want to bring him in and hug him and there's his son, in the next moment, there's pictures of him fornicating with another beautiful chick the night before. And he's all, so Sutter's really going to the world, hang on everybody. Put your seatbelt on. This is the fourth episode. I love Jax too, but every man is not perfect. And we're about to find out where this is going to go. And that's what happened. That's what happened in 92 shows. It's like,
and because you brought it up before, it's the pinnacle switch of television, right? The Sopranos and all that. But you didn't have, and maybe I'm wrong because I probably am because I'm an idiot. But the one thing is you didn't have like an anti-hero, which is what they were creating with this Vic Mackey played by Michael Chiklis on The Shield and Tony Soprano and then The Wire with Avon and Stringer. Like,
yeah.
And he was this, the difference with Jax was he was an anti-hero, but he was so handsome and so like the women wanted him. And he had like all those qualities of like the things he did with that guy where once he realized that that guy had hit this girl, you knew he was going to beat this guy's ass. And so he had all these admirable qualities, and yet at the same time, like you said, you know, cheating and killing and doing whatever. So he's this anti-hero, but you loved him. So that was really evident to me in this. And then the other thing is, and I want to get to this. So now, Tig and Juice finally come back from this run, right? We took the truck. We moved all the AKs. We're bringing everything over there. We walk in to the patch.
No, no.
It's over.
Can I just say, when you say, here we go, and a second later, Bobby's gal vomits all over.
Daytona. Daytona, her name was.
Daytona. I'm telling you what. And that day that we filmed that, you know that that was the end of the day. You and me walking in, they've already had a big party. Bobby Elvis has done his pool table action. He's never had a better day in his life, Boone.
Never in his life.
And he never will again.
Never.
That was an incredible day for him. Never. Daytona was amazing. Everyone's having a good time. You and me are
still thinking about it. He's still thinking about it.
And
in the shower.
We, And we walk in, and it was kind of real for you and me because we knew as Tig and Juice what we had filmed in the scene that we filmed with getting bitten and loading the gas, you know, and getting and having the funny shit and great. But then we missed out on the biggest party ever. We missed out on the big, yeah. And so to walk in on that and then Tig getting all jealous and weird and sulking and stuff.
And I want you to be funny. Happy. So I say, here we go. Cause I want you, want you to think, not blame me. I want you to realize that we still made it.
Yes.
And you have like a half a second. Tig has like a half a second where he's like, maybe it's not over. Maybe it was a rager. And then she vomits.
Gone.
So now Tig is sulking, right? And there's all this business being done, right? We know with Jerry and the tribe and all that. And then the gift is given to you at the end with Tig.
Three gifts. Three beautiful gifts, yeah.
Three beautiful gifts. And again, we're establishing Tig, right? We're seeing him as who he's going to become. And then obviously everything we just said now with Tara, Gemma. So as we're leaning, we're getting into the end of this episode. As we're getting into the end of this episode, we start to see Gemma really becoming that, you know, where the little nefarious character of like telling Clay. And this is when, if you remember earlier, and I had to really switch my mindset, it always felt like, because remember, we didn't know what was going to happen, that Gemma and Clay were hiding this really big secret about John Teller, right? Like that's what it felt like. And they reference it a lot in this episode where she goes, I just hope he's following in the right father's footsteps.
Yes.
And I was thinking like, man, they're really painting these two as these villains because again, we're rooting for Jax, right? We're rooting for him, even though he's this outlaw who does these bad things. We are team Jax 100%, as they say. And I'm watching that and I'm going, wow. And then to really double down on it, he goes to that cave where his father's poetry is. Which is phenomenal, by the way. I mean, just that aspect of the show, of his father's words, because we didn't really do a lot of those, right?
As an actor, we did a few, but and more earlier than later. But if you are playing Jax the Teller, as Charlie was, and you're given that nugget as an actor, to not a lot of dialogue, you're reading prose. It's your dad who you never got to know. Died in what they say was a motorcycle accident. Mm-hmm. As a viewer, you know something's going to come out. But at that time, Charlie could, as Jax, do a lot of really dark things that I know ate at him as the character. But when he went to the cave or he saw his father's writings, the book, and he went up on top of the clubhouse and read them at times, when you had that as a character, you're golden because you can go back to missing your father and wanting to learn about your dad.
Yeah.
And why am I doing what I'm doing? I'm trying to do right. But he's the VP. Clay is the president. Then you've got Gemma. It's his real mom. So the family things that Sutter kept throwing at all of us, it was deep and dark and beautiful.
And I think, and again, correct me if I'm wrong here, what we missed up to this point is Wendy is gone, right? The mom of his child is gone. His kid is, you know, born with this heart thing and
way
in the
too
hospital.
Early and a lot of issues. Yeah.
And then the love of his life returns. So you have layer upon layer upon layer for this character. And we're only in the fourth episode.
No doubt. And listen to this, Theo. I forgot. Here's Tara. I forgot that she was a charming girl, then went to Chicago, became a big-ass doctor. And now you're coming back to charming? And Gemma calls her on that. What are you doing here? Why are you coming back? I mean, I'm being a bit more gruff than the dialogue was. It was much better. But Tara's listening to Gemma, and we don't know that this Cohen guy, what comes up in a couple more.
Stalker,
we don't,
yeah.
But there's the scene. Sutter, again, plants the flower petals on her car. These flower petals that were on her car that the wind was blowing away, Cohen planted those. I love you, honey. I love you, sweetie. I miss you. Do you miss me? Can we get back to the way we were so I can Wow.
Right? He chased her out of Chicago. She left.
He followed her. Yes.
And here I am thinking, and again, I love Jay Carnes as an actor. I could say it forever because I'm one of the biggest Shields fans. Hungry Like the Wolf scene, which if you know the show, anybody's listening, is one of my favorites. You don't realize how important now the character Agent Cohen, whatever it is, because he's the reason Tara's back in Charming, right? So there's these things of like...
Correct.
So I'm blown away. And then you realize that she, Gemma, and I guess you'll come to find out, Gemma doesn't like Tara. And the main reason I'm taking, and correct me if I'm wrong, is because Tara basically shit on the town the whole time she was there. She hated everything about it. She dated Jax when she was young and obviously always talked down about Charming, right? And Gemma is like pro-Charming. I know what that's like with Staten Island and all that. So it's like doesn't like her, right?
That is completely correct. And also, as you know, being in the 1% biker world that we were in for 7 years, Gemma's the mom. She's the matriarch. She's like the, wait a minute, you're gonna date someone within club circles, she's a doctor. So we do bad things. We sell drugs and guns and wait a minute, you're not bringing her into this world. Like, wait, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Jax, you're being groomed to be the president of a club. You can't marry
the biggest doctor. Club. The biggest club in the world. In America. And the main charter.
Is in Charming. You're not gonna, so Gemma doesn't want to break her son's heart by being a bitch to Jax, but she also, what are you doing here? What? Then she finds a gun in her purse, a doctor. Gemma is all over it. She doesn't know what she's all over yet, but she's snipping. And this is the fourth episode of 92. She's already, fourth episode. Gemma's already snipping Tara out. She's going, hey, you, what are you doing? What are you doing? Be careful, girl. Get the serial numbers off of it. Like the shit that Tara learns from Gemma in this episode, and Tara shows nothing. That's why Maggie was so brilliant as a character, man. She just, even when she saw those photos at the end, just her look, and we were all so beautifully subtle on that show. We were all so well cast. Tara was just like, oh, what the?
Yeah. And again, you talk about the subtleness. So there's a couple of things, like you said before. An actor could have chosen when Jax went to that cave to play that very different. Could have been emotional, could have been, breaking down, could have been overly, joyous.
Touching it with his hands.
None of that. Subtle. None of it. Right? Just
really, really good.
Very subtle. Obviously, Maggie does the same thing. And one thing we know about Sons of Anarchy is there are characters that are bigger and there's characters that are smaller. And that's by design, right? You need to kind of go hills and valleys. You know, you can't have your Chuckies and, you have to have those to have the, you have to have these bigger characters, the Tigs, absolutely, to go into the lower character. Meaning, when I mean lower, I don't mean on a scale. I mean in tone, in based in reality, whatever. I think what I enjoyed about this so much was, one, I don't know if I could have watched this a few years ago. I don't know what it is about now, but it felt good. It felt good. And it made me, and again, I'll just say, cause I know we're at the end here. It was like, what it felt good about for me was like, it felt like I was watching like an old home movie in a way. And I was so appreciative of it. I think sometimes you don't, even though a lot of people, I mean, everybody in the world knows it and whatever, I was so appreciative. And then I think what I was thinking, I mean, of course you always do like, man, if I knew now what I know then, right? But like in that moment of what that was, the one word, and I talked about it earlier, that kept ringing to me was the innocence of, and it feels like everything, maybe the way the world was at the time, maybe the way we were at the time, maybe the way how appreciative we were, or the fact that we were just working. And the truth is, at that moment, I was a guest star. I didn't know if I would be on that show longer than 5-6 episodes. I didn't know if I would, if the show would even run more than a year. And it was like a put me in coach thing. And I was just so happy to be there. just so happy to be there. And, And I got to tell you, it gave me, it made me super nostalgic. It was weird in a way.
It was, I couldn't even begin to say that any better than what you just said, but I just want to add, for me, to, we worked on that show. Yeah. See, people in today were coronavirus, were this, we're staying in, we're trying to do the right thing, where people are hating it, people are lying, the world is changing. To go back to 2008, it's one thing, I know you do, I do, we have buddies from college, we have buddies from high school, we have buddy Mona, I love Mona so much, your pal, our pal. We get to, but when you work on something, Sons of Anarchy is over. It'll never be forgotten. Sons of Anarchy is finished. It'll never be forgotten. This show, we could talk about you and me till the cows come home, because watching that show last night, one show, I hadn't seen it since 2008. That was brilliant, because Tig, very early days. Juice, very early days. Our relationship, very early days, but explosively funny. Clay, Jax, Gemma, Tara, Unser, and Sheridan, all these right characters, and the guest stars, like Cohen was one of the first main, like, you're still part of the club, even though you get your billion the next year. But you're still a star of the show. He was a guest star.
Yeah.
This was the beginning of the guest stars on this show that everyone in Hollywood wanted to be a part of, because the show exploded. But those were early days, and it was a much different time in the world. And wow, what a...
And to go into the business for a second, for someone like me, it was like, you can make a living being a guest star, a recurring guest star on a TV show, because that's how I was making my living.
You sure did. That point. You sure did. You sure did.
Yeah. I had done every TV show, and the most I had done was like 2-3 episodes of a TV show. I had not been, always a bridesmaid, never a bride. And this was like, oh, I'm going to take the qualities that I use as a guest star, and they're going to, and then hopefully if I do it right, there's a promotion in place. On the other ones, there wasn't a promotion, because your character could get killed off after 3 episodes. So that's what I mean when I say that it was revolutionary, I think, not just for television, but for all of us, for the people who had not done television, for the people who, something like this wasn't being done on television, much less rarely film, because you only have 2 hours, 3 hours on a film. I think that what I take from it and seeing everyone was, this had the balance of comedy, action, stunts, drama, relationships, realness. This one episode packed it all in.
This one episode did. You want to talk about sex, drugs, and rock and roll? This show had it all. It had it all. And it was the beginning days in 2008 when Fox, what do we got? Sons of Anarchy. Here we go. Landgraf rolled the dice with Sutter and Linson. And here we go. We cast the thing. We're shooting the thing. This show was on the screens in fall, and we're still filming the first season. We don't know if we're going to get picked up. It was a crazy beginning time that I was so glad to be part of with you. It was amazing.
Yeah, and this is the beginning. This is it. This is the beginning of our Reaper Reviews. Hashtag Reaper Reviews, the double R. The double R is here. And again, if
we just talked for 4 days on one show, holy crap, Theo.
And if this goes well, we're going to start bringing in, again, we have to really weigh the options here of who we would bring in on this. And bring,
there's going to be a lot of inner fighting over that. There's going to be a lot of Tommy calling, calling Tommy, and DL's always going to be harping in the background.
He might be on right now.
Yeah, Charlie, we'll never be able to find Charlie. Who knows?
No, he's hiding somewhere.
And you're with me right now, baby.
That's all that matters. This is our first one. Tig and Juice time has become Reaper Reviews on Theory, and I am over the moon about this, and I'm so glad we got to do it. And now we're going to go figure out what our next one is, and it's going to be weird to go shift from like, this was early, to go to like season 7, or season 6, or the stuff where people jump around. And this is good, because we'll give people the warning to watch it a week before. All right, brother. I appreciate you. I love you.
I love you. Love to Megan and the boys, and my girls say hi. Yeah, crazy everybody. Time. Stay safe and healthy.
Stay safe. Let's do this. Give the girls all the love. Oh, we are. We're going to do it all the time.
Love you so much.
I love you too.
Wow. Just wow. There it is. The first ever Reaper reviews here on Theory. You know the deal, right? Go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, review, go to Spotify, follow. And then while you're there, you know, on those Apple, reviews, write down what episode you want, my brother Kimothy Coates and I to discuss. And then also, you know, remember, we're going to be bringing in some special people, throughout to discuss them, with us. So get on there, subscribe, rate, review. I'm so excited. This has become part of the Theory journey. And, I think we're going to have a lot of fun doing this. So the first ever Reaper reviews are here. Hashtag Theory Pod. Hashtag Reaper reviews. The double R. You know what it is. Easy on yourself. I appreciate you.